Yes, I'm going to talk about nematodes and their role in ecosystems, and think first about soil health, I guess the ability of the soil to perform its ecosystem functions. We know probably least about the biological components of the soil, of the three main components. And I'm going to focus on three ecosystem services to which nematodes contribute. I want to refine or use the definition of soil health that I adapt from Paul Soror 100 years ago. He was a plant pathologist, and thinking of the soil as a living system, as long as the soil is able to perform its biological functions, we would consider it to be within its latitude of health. Once the conditions are such that it can no longer perform biological functions of interest or ecosystem functions of interest outside of the latitude of health. And I think that many conventionally managed agricultural soils are outside of the latitude of health with regard to certain ecosystem services. So there are many, many organisms in the soil, and of course they're performing many ecosystem services, and they're doing that within a variety of microhabitats that are determined by the nature of the soil matrix. Because of the diversity and complexity of the biological system, it's useful to have bioindicators. And I'm going to use nematodes as bioindicators, but of course, many groups of organisms can be used that way. We have found over the last decade or so, perhaps the last two decades, that certain groups of nematodes are indicators of the abundance and function of other organisms in the system. So some of the bacterial feeding nematodes are indicators of the presence and abundance and activity of bacteria, protozoa, and certain mites. Some of those nematodes that feed on fungi are, of course, indicative of the presence and abundance of fungi, and other nematodes within the same group feeding on bacteria and fungivorous mites. And then there are the nematodes that are predators of other organisms and predators of other nematodes, also indicators of predators within other groups of organisms. So to give you a review of the bioindicator potential of nematodes, here are nematodes that are parasites of plants. They're herbivores. They're all equipped with a stylet and some kind of a pumping mechanism to withdraw the cell contents from plant roots. And here are nematodes that feed on fungi with smaller stylets and larger pumping mechanisms, but indicators of course, the presence and an abundance of their food. Here's a nematode that is a bacterial feeding nematode, an indicator of soil enrichment, also an indicator of the presence and abundance of protozoa, but with an open stoma. So here's a nematode that just moves through the soil solution and siphons in the soil solution, extracting bacteria from it, indicator of enrichment. It's also a nematode with a certain plasticity in its development, such that if resources are limited, it will go into an alternative developmental state in which it can endure for long periods of time. Then there are other bacterial feeding nematodes, when resources are more limited, that have elaborate structures on their head region, on their lip region, that we think are used for stirring up the soil solution and getting the bacteria agitated so that the nematode can ingest them, or perhaps for scraping bacteria off the surface of soil particles. At a higher trophic level, predator nematodes, this is an example of a specialist predator, which ingests nematodes and rips them open on these sharp teeth that does so. And here's a more generalist predator that feeds on a diversity of microinvertebrates with a sharp stylet that it penetrates into its prey and withdraws the contents. So here are predator nematodes, specialist predators feeding on other nematodes, and here is a That was a nematode that was going to feed on other nematodes as it went along. Here's another group of predators that have some plasticity in their development. In this case, if there is an abundance of nematode prey present, they'll have a wide stoma, a wide mouth with teeth, and are adapted to feeding on nematodes, as this one is tearing into a nematode here. If the nematode prey are less abundant and perhaps bacteria more abundant, then the stoma, they develop with a stoma that is narrower and more adapted to ingesting bacteria. And I've seen the behavior of these nematodes where they will tear open a nematode prey like this so that the body contents come out of the nematode cuticle and then either feed on that directly or then leave the corpse and come back in some period of time when all this body content material has been accessed by bacteria, and then they feed on both the bacteria and the body content. So the adaptability and plasticity in their function. The spatial diversity of the environment that these organisms are functioning in the soil. So we can think of the environment as a matrix of patches of different environmental conditions. And if we think of the variability in those environmental conditions with depth affected by temperature, moisture, aeration, gradients, organic residues, and so on, both in depth and in space, and then in this direction in time, affected by diurnal and seasonal climatic events, the life course phenology of the organisms involved, and then some random factors like the presence of rocks or restrictive layers or a root happens to go through this patch. All these affect, create a diversity of microhabitats for the organisms. We, in some experiments in an organic agriculture experiment, were examining the bacterial feeding nematodes in this case, and in this one, the plots in the organic treatment, there were 13 species of bacterial feeding nematodes. So we examined the physiology of these 13 species of nematodes, and here I show some of them, and you can see that the different life stages of these different species of nematodes were accomplished in different numbers of days, different periods of time. The metabolic rates of these different species of nematodes had different thermal optima. Some were metabolically most active at lower temperatures, some at higher temperatures, but all from the same environmental conditions. And then the metabolic rates of individual life stages of these nematodes varied. So we have a whole range of adaptations here that allow these nematodes to access the range of microhabitats that are created by the soil matrix. So now, thinking back to my use of Sorar's model for the latitude of health, we can think of the ecosystem function not being performed by one species of nematodes, but by a whole group or a guild of nematode species that vary in their physiological adaptations. So if we take ecosystem function one, whatever it was, say mineralization of organic materials, there may be several guilds of nematodes performing that. And those guilds may be adapted to, say, different temperature conditions. And within each temperature condition group, perhaps nematodes of different behavior attributes, different size, that can access those or make use of those different micropatches. So the diversity of the organisms within this one functional group of nematodes that mineralize bacteria, mineralize organic molecules, increases the breadth of the latitude of health. Because there's diversity, then the latitude of health is greater, and the magnitude of the function is greater because there are more organisms accessing more of those microhabitats performing that function. We've got complementarity of function. And so I've illustrated that here as diversity allows them to access more diverse environment. We use nematodes to assess ecosystem services, and this is built on some ideas of a fellow called Bongers about 25 years ago. And he categorized nematodes into five groups, actually. Those that are colonizers, that essentially are strategists, and those that are that develop more slowly, that are sensitive to disturbance, more long-lived, fewer eggs being produced, that are essentially case strategists. So we think when a soil sample contains an abundance of these nematodes, we consider the system to be enriched, that there's abundant food, perhaps fresh organic matter that's being decomposed by bacteria that provides resources for these nematodes. When there are an abundance of these nematodes present, the predator nematodes, we consider there to be more structure in the ecosystem. In other words, there are more linkage, there are more organisms feeding on each other, more regulation of opportunistic species. And then there are groups of nematodes that are pretty tolerant of a wide range of conditions. I think of them as basal fauna for many systems. So that leads us to the idea of taking the nematode assemblage from a single soil sample and creating from it an enrichment index based upon those enrichment indicators and a structure index based on those structure indicators or regulatory indicators, and plotting the structure index and enrichment index on a background platform with four quadrants, and then stating hypotheses about what we believe the system should is represented if it plotted in this quadrant or that quadrant or that quadrant or that quadrant, right? So here the disturbed and enriched bacterial, but perhaps not very regulated, not very resistant to opportunistic species. And here, still enriched, but more mature, more higher trophic levels, more regulation of opportunism, and so on. And so we have definitions of what we consider the system to be like, depending upon where the nematode assemblage plots, and which is useful. It makes us think about the systems differently. It makes us use our soil samples a little differently. But it doesn't tell us anything about magnitude of the services, right? Because we could have 100 nematodes in the soil sample plotting here, or 10,000 nematodes plotting there. Presumably, the magnitude of the service would be greater if there were 10,000 there. So it tells us about potential. Doesn't indicate biomass or activity, which led us to the idea of the metabolic footprint. How much carbon are these nematodes in different assemblages using? So how much carbon is being processed, how much energy is being used by these nematodes as an indicator of the function that they're performing and therefore the service that they're providing, which then allows us to go back to the faunal profile based on the structure of the nematode assemblage and put it an abundance character based on biomass and physiological activity to where we can the magnitude or the size of this metabolic footprint indicates the potential magnitude of the service being provided by the nematodes. Then back to diversity. I talked about diversity at the beginning and the importance of diversity in terms of accessing different microhabitats within the system. If we think about those nematodes that mineralize nitrogen, and let's say for this example we have 1,000 units of nematode biomass performing that function. Well, that 1,000 units of nematode biomass could be distributed among 8 species of nematodes like this, so that 2 of the nematode species have much of the biomass and a lot of them have very little. The effective number of species then, the true diversity, the effective number of species of this group is something a little over 2. Most of the clout is involved in 2 species and the others contribute very little. We still have 1,000 units of biomass in the system. Or alternatively, we could have divided that, or nature could have divided that system in more uniformly. The biomass could have been more evenly distributed across the 8 species. In that case, if we calculate the true diversity, the true diversity of this, or the effective number of species in this class, is something over 7, or around 7. Still got 1,000 units of biomass. And just to put this in perspective, if all of these species had the same biomass or the same physiological activity, then the effective number of species would be in the same as species richness, right? They all have equal clout in the system. So what I propose is that we calculate a diversity-weighted biomass, the product of the effective number of species performing the function and the biomass that's in that functional class. And I suggest that this may be a good measure of the magnitude of the ecological functional ecosystem service being provided within these functional guilds of nematodes, in this case mineralizing organic matter. And of course we can weight the importance of these. In this case they're unweighted, but I could weight, if I consider biomass to be less important than diversity, I could weight it that way, or vice versa. Thinking more about this idea of diversity-weighted biomass, in this case the mineralization function and the predation function from a cropping systems experiment we were conducting on the Davis campus over 8 sampling periods over 2 years. And in this cropping system experiment, we have conventional production systems with either conservation tillage or standard tillage, or organic systems with standard tillage, conservation tillage, or minimum tillage. And this is the diversity-weighted biomass for the mineralization function, greater in the organic system, more carbon, more fuel into the food web, and similarly with the predation function, greater in the organic system. So diversity-weighted biomass is higher. What I think is also interesting is how consistent that remains. So if we look at just the predation function, in the standard tillage in the conventional system, a very disturbed system, the diversity-weighted biomass of predators is low, but their variability over the 8 sampling periods remains low. In other words, they're low and they stay low throughout the period. Similarly, the diversity-weighted biomass of the predators in the organic system with minimum tillage is higher, and its coefficient of variation over time remains relatively low. So it's sort of consistently performing. So I think that the goal in stewardship of these systems is to maximize the mean diversity-weighted biomass and minimize the coefficient of variation, so maintain them at an appropriate level. Here's some tests of ecosystem services with nematodes that we've conducted over the years. In the first case, the column experiment, and in these columns are a soil and bacteria and different species of nematodes. And every other day, we leach the columns, collect the leachate in these flasks at the bottom, and measure the amount of mineral nitrogen. And what we find with organic matter of different carbon to nitrogen ratios, if a bacterial feeding nematode is present, we increase the rate of mineralization by about 20%. And that varies with the abundance of nematodes and so on, but that we certainly increase the rate of mineralization. So we applied that in some of our organic agriculture fields and monitored what was happening with the amount of nitrogen mineralized by the nematodes in the system over time. And what we find is that there's a functional complementarity in this case I'm drawing 3, but there are about 7 or 8 that fall in this category, that are adapted to lower temperature conditions early in the growing season, and their combined impact mineralizes this amount of nitrogen indicated by the black line. Then later in the growing season, we have nematodes, bacterial feeding nematodes, adapted to higher temperatures and perhaps more stress conditions, continuing with the mineralization of nitrogen. So we have functional continuity that's provided by this diversity of nematodes that are in the system performing the same function. Another ecosystem service of the microbial feeding nematodes is the redistribution, or the distribution of bacteria to new resources. So here we had a petri dish with a patch of bacteria, and 1 week later you can see the circle is about twice or 2.5 times the diameter. Here there were 5 bacterial feeding nematodes present, feeding on the bacteria, moving around the plate. Some of the bacteria survive passage through the gut of the nematode, others adhere to the cuticle of the nematode, so they're distributed around. When there were 20, there's more movement and greater distribution of the bacteria through the plate. I think of this as nematodes farming bacteria. The nematodes are taking the bacteria to new resources, or get more bacteria, more resources for the nematodes. Another example of that kind of thing is this experiment by Horiuchi, where he has a legume in a petri dish, and a patch of nodulating bacteria, and for the nodulating bacteria to come in contact with the plant roots need to grow to where that bacteria is. But with a bacterial feeding nematode in the plate, so the nematode was moving around and carried the bacteria to the plant root more rapidly. And he did this quite elegant experiment with bacterial feeding nematodes in the center of a dish, a legume on this side, and a control on this side, and found that the nematodes, some nematodes, were attracted through the bacteria to the legume, but not in that direction. Other nematodes, however, other species of nematodes were not attracted. They were not affected at all by either the presence of a legume or the presence of a non-legume. So some interesting relationships there between hosts and nematodes feeding on bacteria and plants that are not affected by those nematodes. The regulation of opportunistic species. Here, a field location in the Napa Valley, a vineyard in the Napa Valley, and next to it, a neighboring oak woodland. Using our nematode faunal analysis, we show that in the vineyard, the system is enriched, which we expect for agricultural systems, but not very structured. There are very few predators in the system, so there's no regulation of the opportunistic species. In the woodland, 20 meters away, the system is still relatively enriched, but very much more structured, many more predators in the system. So we take soil from both of those systems, and we introduce a non-resident nematode and measure its survival. We find that the soil from the agricultural system, from the vineyard, is less suppressive than the soil from the oak woodland. And in the oak woodland, of course, we have these predaceous species of nematodes. I looked at these kinds of relationships in banana production systems in Costa Rica. Here, an organic production system, which has actually a diversity of plants besides bananas, but a leguminous cover crop. And here, an industrial production system that produces wonderful bananas. But if we look at the biomass of nematodes in different functional groups or different trophic groups in the organic system, that's the black lines, much greater than in the conventional system. And similarly, the diversity or the true diversity or even the species richness of nematodes in these different groups in the organic system, much greater than in the conventional system. And when we look at the range of trophic levels or the functional groups of these nematodes, of course, we've got, first of all, the producers, the carbon fixers in the plants, or those organisms that are opportunistic, that are feeding on root exudates or directly by a vivary, and then organisms that feed on them, various trophic levels, top predators, and so on. In the industrial production system, we have the plants, and we have things that take advantage of the plants, and not much else. They're using 3 applications of nematicides a year to keep these plants growing, to reduce the populations. Up to 50 applications of things, of various products per year, to produce those beautiful bananas. So we conclude from this that management practices in industrialized agriculture result in soil food web simplification, reduce the higher trophic levels, and reduce species diversity of the organisms in the soil. And so we were evolving some hypotheses about that, and we tested it with data from various Central American countries. And here's our model. Our model is that there is organic matter in the system, of course, either by root exudation or litter from plants, but we can amplify that organic matter in the system, and if we do so, we provide resources for the microbial biomass, and that microbial biomass provides resources for what I'm calling the amplifiable prey. That means those are nematodes that feed on the microbial biomass, and that we can amplify by creating more microbial biomass by providing resources. That provides more resources for predator nematodes, and the predator nematodes in turn should put more pressure on the target prey nematodes, the plant parasitic nematodes that would otherwise be damaging the bananas. And when we test that model in various in banana plantations from various countries, we find that, yeah, the, as the prey abundance increases, so we've got more prey per target nematode, per plant parasitic nematodes. But this really requires that the amplifiable prey and the target prey and all the actors be co-located. The things that have to interact need to be in the same spatial area of the soil. That was the case in the banana, in the organic banana production system, but it was not the case in a series of experiments we did in almond orchard in California. And this, and here our target prey was the ring nematode, a damaging pest of Prunus species. We were putting organic matter in the soils, incorporating in the top 15 centimeters or so of soil. And our idea there was to enhance food for the amplifiable prey and amplify the bacterial and fungal feeding nematodes. And they share a common predator, in this case a predaceous fungus, with the ring nematode. So the idea would be we build up the predaceous fungus, we put more pressure on the target prey. Well, this worked in the sense that we built up the predator the predaceous fungus, but it didn't have much effect on the ring nematode because this was a highly disturbed orchard. There was a lot of disking going on. The roots were deeper in the soil because of that surface disturbance. So the ring nematodes feeding on the root were deeper in the soil, and we'd enhance the predators at the soil surface. Over time, there may be a redistribution, but we didn't get that, you know, that instant reward of the process. So all of this brings me to the idea of stewardship, the stewardship of the soil food web, based on carbon and energy. So carbon and nitrogen fixed by the plant, exuded into the soil food web, or getting into the soil food web through herbivory, of course, is fed upon by bacteria, nematodes, fungi, and they have their predators, protozoa and nematodes feeding on bacteria, nematodes, arthropods and fungi feeding on other nematodes, etc., and then top predators in the system dealing with the regulation. But all of these groups of organisms respiring carbon and excreting nitrogen. So if we expect these organisms to be performing some ecosystem function that's important to us, then we need to make sure that we're supplying carbon and energy that is going to reach those organisms. And at the same time, minimize constraints to the functional diversity of the system. So it's not only providing carbon and energy, but removing constraints that might otherwise not allow those functional groups to increase. So here, for example, okay, standing up is important. Okay, fungal feeding, bacterial feeding, and plant feeding nematodes surviving pretty well at different levels of nitrogen. Predator nematodes very sensitive to it, so knocked out of the system. We don't find these very much in agricultural systems. What's the solution? Perhaps systems that produce that provide nutrients at a slower rate, that are less toxic, that are delivered as needed. I like the management practices espoused by the NRCS in terms of keeping the soil covered, using a diversity of cover crops, a diversity of crops in rotation through time. And I like this graph, the graphic, the idea that a diversity of cover crops has different root profiles, produces different sources of carbon in different distribution. We were trying to do the kind of thing with a cover crop experiment where we grew bell beans, the idea of crushing them down on the soil surface rather than incorporating them and creating this forest floor kind of impact of the soybeans in Brazil. The idea that all the players would be in the same place at the same time, and we would get the kind of ecosystem functions and services that we required. So, as a summary, I think the importance here is to maintain the flow of energy to each trophic level, and to provide favorable environment for the functional classes that we expect to be performing the ecosystem services that are necessary. Thank you.
We have time for one question. without a lot of follow-up. And if you could repeat the question, please.
Eric?
Yeah, Howard, do we know much about nematode use of root exudates?
Repeat the question. Yeah, so the question is, do we know much about the nematode use of root exudates? We're not aware of any direct use of root exudates by nematodes, but it seems to me that might happen. You know, there are nematodes, plant-feeding nematodes that survive in the soil for long periods of time and are trying to find roots, and they've got stylets with holes in them. I don't know if that happens or not, so there's not any real evidence. But the root exudates really are processed through bacteria and through fungi and then impact the amplifiable prey, the bacterial and fungal feeding nematodes.
All right, thanks again, Howard. Nice to talk.